two very wonderful selections this morning. Thank you very much. We first met, the four of us, 43 years ago this fall, as bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and pretty much half-wit seminarians, and when theological school was essentially an all-male preserve. We were, and still are, Steve, Sam, Dave, and Gord. The latter cannot be confused with my son. And I'm the last man standing of those of us who are still in the ministry. We stayed in and sometimes out of touch over the years until seven years ago when we began a practice of spending one weekend per summer together over in Northampton, New Hampshire, where one member of this not particularly so fearsome foursome lives. This year marked for three of us the arrival of our 65th birthdays, with the fourth guy soon to follow this fall. And to mark the occasion, Sam brought these birthday presents along. For me and Dave and Gordon, this little thing here called Brain Workout. It's got these mental exercises that you do in this book here, and then there's this 3-minute egg timer that you're supposed to flip over after you do the exercise to see how well you do each one. The idea is to see how well or not our minds are still functioning at this point in our lives. I gave you just one exercise out of this book. It says, imagine you start with $5 and spend the coins listed below. How much money will you have left in each case? And it gives you this whole list of coin combinations. So you're supposed to read that, flip this baby over, and then do the calculations and let your mind go to work. Well, I've been working my way through this thing. I'm happy to report that so far the old noodle is holding up pretty well. I'll admit I do have a hard time remembering just every now and then exactly why I have walked into a particular room. But if this little device is any kind of indication, things seem to be still firing along pretty well up here. So I guess I'm in good enough shape, I'm good to go for still writing sermons as we move into another year together here. Just to be on the safe side, though, when it comes to relying on my memory, you saw it was a help this morning, I keep taped to the pulpit up here the words that are spoken in practically all of our Sunday services, usually as they were today, after our time of silent meditation. First ones go, the mystery is that we are connected. And it's these very familiar words I want to use to remind all of us here at the head of our 2010-2011 church year as to what we're about and why we are here. I think most of us know that. It doesn't hurt to offer a reminder as we begin another year in our life. Now that our many and varied paths have brought us back together again here, after we shared our symbols of water representing our various summer journeys last Sunday, we could use these words, which have become something of a mantra for us, to chart our course. The mystery is that we are connected. Sometimes it's not all that mysterious. We see evidence of our connectedness all around us. I would say the mystery part has to do with what it is that ultimately binds us together as one another to our larger world and universe. As is the case with many of my sermons, in saying that, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I will speak then, though, for a few minutes this morning, about three kinds of connections that I see these words pointing us towards, some of them more mysterious than others. The first is the most visible one. We are connected to one another. In our immediate past church year, I witnessed, as I know many of you did, this kind of congregational connectedness in ways that I don't believe I had seen quite as intensely or quite as highly as in previous years, in all the previous years I've spent here, as a matter of fact. I've never doubted all along that connection was there, but the ways in which it was demonstrated just over the past 10, 12 months has been truly remarkable. I won't replay those months now. There is no need. Many of us know of some of the very horrible, untimely deaths that reached into our congregational family over that period of time. And if there was any kind of good to be extracted from such terrible losses, I saw it in the way so many of you stood with one another in the midst of all of them. I've been proud to serve as the minister of this congregation since the day my ministry began with you back in the summer of the fall of 1988, but never more so than these past several months. And we stood together in times of great joy as well, as we sent one of our members into the Unitarian Universalist ministry and celebrated the marriage of couples to whom the benefits and responsibilities of legal marriage had previously been denied. The mystery and the great joy is that we are connected. Of course, not all of our connections are found up on the peaks or down in the valleys. Most of them, in fact, are found as we celebrate and affirm our connections in many little, but hardly insignificant ways. A conversation over coffee, sharing in a covenant group, enjoying a potluck, even doing committee work, the connections come through. Indeed, it is this sense of spiritual relatedness, as I would call it, that ultimately makes us a community. To be sure, we have to have our programs, our activities, we need our structures of governance, we need to raise money and pay our bills, we need to care for our beautiful facility, all those kinds of things. We wouldn't exist if we weren't doing them. But without that mysterious and yet very real human connection among us, all of these other necessities would not by themselves make us the community we are called to be. The mystery is we are connected. At the same time, and moving to that second level of connectedness now, if the only mystery we celebrate is the one that connects us to each other within this wonderful place, we can very easily become institutionally ingrown. We are here for one another, but we're also and equally connected to a wider community and a wider world to which we bring our principles and our values. There are far more implications to this dimension of our connectedness than I would ever try to address in a single sermon. And since it's only September and I got quite a few ahead of me yet, I don't have to do it all at once. This is a point I will be revisiting in the upcoming year. I'm just going to hit on a few matters today. I would like for us to spend some time this year exploring, coming up with ideas on how we as a congregation can strengthen our public ministry. We already do that. We do it quite admirably with our outreach collections and the ways that many of you are involved in the life of our wider community, the communities in which you live. Many of those outreach collections and many of your work is devoted to meeting human needs here in Nashua and in Barron's. I am thinking that there are additional hands-on ways together we can engage in our ministry of outreach to our community. This is a matter for exploration and action in the months ahead. I hope you will give it some serious deliberation. Beyond the local, we Unitarian Universalists, along with many other persons of goodwill and good faith, have long stood for religious freedom and religious toleration. We're seeing this principle sorely, and in many ways frighteningly tested in recent days. I can only speculate, but I still wonder what it is like at this present time to be an American citizen who practices the Muslim faith. According to the Council on American Islamic Relations, I would be one of 7 million such citizens. I wonder how safe and accepted I would feel right now. I would see our national news media, at least for a time, take a crackpot, really know-nothing and self-anointed minister with a congregation of 50, and turn him into an international figure when he announces plans to hold a Quran burning. Thankfully, those plans did not come to fruition, but not before they have unleashed similar incidents elsewhere. I will be witnessing a not-so-muted whispering campaign, often by persons who clearly know better, that our president, an openly professing and avowed Christian, is really one of them. How would it feel to see my faith being used in a cynical attempt to smear the president of my country? I would see what could have been, and maybe hopefully still can be, a creative, constructive conversation about the various meanings of having a Muslim center called the Cordova Center in some proximity to the September 11 attacks in New York City. I would see that being politically exploited in ways that demean and debase my faith. I might be remembering, maybe even wistfully, how in the immediate aftermath of those horrible attacks, then President George Bush made it a point to declare in his speech to the nation that what happened on that terrible day was not a true expression of Islam, that we were not going to be at war with Islam, that Islam was a religion of peace. I would wonder what had happened in the intervening years since a former American president spoke those words. And perhaps maybe I would also be heartened. Heartened by the responses of persons of goodwill and good faith from many faith traditions speaking out against these attacks on my faith. Perhaps I would take heart in some words expressed by the president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, the Reverend Peter Morales, some 10 days ago as September the 11th, 2010 approached. Here's what Reverend Morales said. Americans everywhere are preparing to honor the memories of those lost in the tragic events of this day, 9 years ago. We honor those victims best by reaffirming our opposition to terrorism in all its forms and recommitting to the ideals of freedom and justice that are at the heart of the American experience. And then Peter went on. But out of pain, fear, or cynicism, there are some among us who feel compelled to act with intolerance and violence towards our Muslim brothers and sisters. Unitarian Universalists are called to denounce all such acts of bigotry. We're also called to defend our inherent right to worship as we choose and honor the rich tradition of America's multicultural communities. We are called to stand on the side of love. I encourage every person of conscience to speak up for diversity and freedom, no matter what your faith, and join us in standing on the side of love. I thank Peter for these words spoken on behalf of our association. The events then of recent days are really part of a larger mosaic. They're part of a larger challenge of how well we or not in this nation are going to deal with its rapidly changing demographic face when it comes to matters of race, religion, ethnicity, and other such factors. Again, this is a topic to which I will be returning in the weeks and months ahead. For now, it is time to move on. We have a connection in this congregation, in our community, and in our nation. The mystery and the reality is that we are connected globally as well. This coming Tuesday, September the 21st, is International Peace Day, so designated by the United Nations General Assembly in 1982 and endorsed by a resolution of our Unitarian Universalist Association's General Assembly in 2002 and in subsequent GAs. Its purpose is a simple one, but with profound implications. International Peace Day does not put forth a particular political agenda, strategy, or ideology. Rather calls, quote, for individuals, organizations, and nations to create practical acts of peace on a shared day. It is sobering, to say nothing of disheartening and painful, to think of the number of lives lost and shattered along with the destruction that has been wrought and the wars that have been waged just in the 28 years since that UN resolution was passed. And I would just offer a couple of reminders along this line. One is that our calling is to be faithful, more so than to be immediately successful. With all the unfinished work and all the daunting obstacles that still lie before us when it comes to all members of the human family living in a safe and peaceful world, we have made it thus far because of those who held up this ideal in the face of all that would deny its realization. Those, that is to say, who knew they were called to be faithful to their ideals, however much or little success they may have realized at any particular point in time in seeing them realized. The other reminder is found in the words by Mahatma Gandhi. Whatever you do may seem insignificant, but it's important that you do it anyway. Armed with this message and others like it, Gandhi and his followers successfully confronted the power of the British Empire. And so today, following our service as our act of peace, as has already been spoken of, a way of reminding ourselves of the greater ideals to which we are called will be the dedication of our Peace Bowl. It's Shirley Rayburn's gift to our congregation. And in so dedicating it, we become really the second religious congregation in Nashua to set one of these structures of hope and peace in our place. Our good friends up the hill at First Parish Congregational Church got out ahead of us on this one. Just as our flaming chalice over here reminds us of our call to pursue the light of truth, enlightenment, and justice. And just as that rainbow-colored flag on our congregational signboard reminds us of our calling to be a welcoming congregation to all persons, especially when it comes to sexual orientation, it is my hope that this Peace Pole symbol will remind us of our connectedness to our greater human family and inspire us to redouble our efforts towards that day when our earth shall be fair and all her people one. Immediately following our service, and after we sing Go Now in Peace, you're invited then to come to the front of the church in an area between the sanctuary here and the RE wing for a ceremony of dedication of our Peace Pole. Then you can have your coffee. Our children and young people from our church school classes will be joining us. If you have a child age 6 or younger, we ask you to pick them up before joining us out front. We'll start that ceremony at 11:15 or shortly thereafter as we're all congregated out there. And I believe we'll try to get a congregational picture as well. I hope at that time or during the day you'll take the time to thank Shirley for her gift and to acknowledge her appreciation as well to Amy Buckland for arranging the ceremony. The mystery is that we are connected. I have one more brief direction to take us with this mantra before closing for today. And this was and does focus on that word, mystery. One of our callings is to offer a community where this mystery that connects us can be freely explored and freely pursued with all the unfettered energies of our minds and spirits. Somewhere, back in the mystery beginnings of our species, I am imagining that our earliest human ancestors looked up from the immediacy of their lives and they looked up from their daily struggle for survival and began to just vaguely comprehend that somehow, in some way, they were a part of something greater than themselves. That they lived in a world and a universe whose workings had something to do with the workings of their lives. They probably didn't even have a language at that time to talk about this mystery. It was just a sensation. But I would say that moment, however and wherever it took place, was the beginning of religion. As men and women strove to find ways to comprehend and relate to whatever they felt this greater mystery was that surrounded them. As time went by, over many centuries and many millennia, these attempts to comprehend and relate to this greater mystery became codified in particular religious beliefs and practices and rituals and stories and teachings. This was a natural process, one to be expected. It also, in some quarters, came to contain a serious, times even a deadly flaw. And that flaw was the idea that the mystery that we are connected could be captured in a single doctrine or creed or stated set of beliefs and actions or contained in one particular kind of scripture. And one of the greatest tragedies in human history is that countless wars have been fought, countless human beings have been sent to their deaths, and acts of terror have been perpetrated because one group of human beings believed that their definition, their comprehension of the mystery was superior to all others, to the point that it was okay to eliminate those others. Sadly, that mentality has never completely disappeared. Anyone, for example, who sets out to destroy the sacred texts of another faith is still reflecting that mentality, even if they're not taking any lives. But it's also true, thankfully so, that there are adherents of all the world's religious traditions who know that their take on the mystery is but one piece of a larger puzzle. And that picture will never be fully grasped. And they treat it as such. I admire, I respect, I'm always happy to work with such persons towards the greater goal of all world faiths, which is the greater good of humanity itself and a healthy and protected planet. And the basis for all true interfaith sharing and action is that we can only get a piece, we can only get a glimpse of this greater mystery. And the language we use to speak of it, God, Yahweh, Allah, Atman, Spirit of Life, many other such terms, they're among the tools we use in seeking this glimpse. In this religious community, this Unitarian Universalist Church of Nation, we seek, we strive to offer a place, a setting, for each member and friend pursues the meaning of the greater mystery for him or herself. But we also share our journeys of meaning and faith in the hope that all of our journeys and all of our explorations will be deepened and enriched because of that sharing. In the months to come, I shall, as in years past, offer some of my thoughts, some of my discoveries in the nature of this mystery that ultimately connects us all. And so it is a joy to begin another journey of ministry with you as we embark upon another year in our congregational life. May we each and all be blessed by it.